The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Did You Know Show. I am your host, Alex Parnuk, and together we'll attempt to resolve some of the most complex problems on the planet, but in a very common sense sort of way, something that seems to be sorely missing in this age of media information overload. In doing this show, one would ask, why have I committed myself to this task? The plain and simple answer is, I want to get information to you that seems to be missing and not provided in the old media. So join me in the show through your interaction by providing comments, suggestions, and if necessary, criticism when you don't agree. You can contact me at shout@theflypod.com. Did you know that women comprise over half of the population of the United States, approximately 50.8% of the general population? But when it comes to military participation, that percentage drops to 14%, or about 11.4 million active military females. Did you know that women have different standards than men at the initial entry level of basic training, and also during and at the final testing requirements in this process called basic training? Did you know that there is now talk of potential legislation that could be acted upon that would forever change how our society relates to women? There is proposed a change in the Selective Service Act to include women. And finally, did you know that illegal aliens can register with Selective Service? In fact, if one goes to the Selective Service website, you will find that there is special attention given to illegal aliens. They call them undocumented males. But this is another issue for another day. Where to begin to discuss this issue was one that troubled me greatly, being that I am a vet and also an old-fashioned kind of guy. I continue to open the door to the car for my significant other. I also hold the door open for you ladies whenever the opportunity arises. And lastly, I let women enter before me as a show of respect for their gender, due to that most critical of facts that without women, there would be no men. Let's start with the military. Historically, women have been serving in the military since the Revolutionary War. Margaret Corbin was the first woman to receive a military pension for her service and heroism. If one were wanting to visit her burial spot, one would have to travel to the grounds of West Point, New York, the site of the Army's Military Academy, to find where her remnants had been interred as a show of respect and honor for her heroism during the Revolutionary War. During the Civil War, the one and only woman recipient receiving the Medal of Honor was a Dr. Mary Edwards Walker, a nurse and wannabe doctor in the Civil War. Mary Walker, through her perseverance and just plain feminine moxie, a not-giving-up attitude, fought old-fashioned beliefs and standards to earn the respect and admiration of her fellow doctors and patients during the Civil War. When in the end, a board of inquiry determined that her Medal of Honor was to be revoked, she refused to relinquish her Congressional Medal of Honor. When told she had to return it, she wore it. She said no, and she wore it until the day she died. But that's also another story. There is a segment of women out there that claim the mantle of equality when it comes to their place in the world. We know them as feminists. Now, I would never be one to state that for whatever reason, a woman who does the same job as a man should receive less pay than her male counterpart. And when it came time for promotion, she should be considered on the basis of her performance, both in the past and in the future, as her potential abilities and capabilities, rather than the issue of her gender. In today's military structure, we have exceptionally capable women who, when assigned to perform many complex and dangerous tasks, do not shirk from that role. In fact, there have been many acts of valor on the part of women in our armed forces. But the quandary always seems to come down to the question of equality. Some pundits would say women should have equal opportunity to be killed just like men. The question remains, especially when thinking about the military, is it equality sometimes and special treatment at other times? One needs only to go look at the situation of basic trainings, and one immediately finds that there is a disparity at the very beginning of the enlistment process itself. And whether you know it or not, recently, Defense Secretary Leon Panetta signed an order rescinding the ban on women in combat. The secretary, when speaking to reporters, vowed that the decision would not compromise military readiness and would not lower standards for service, such as physical fitness. What this means is that the military will now have to develop plans to implement this decision. But where are we right now in this story? How does the military handle women? In basic training, the standards should be equal. Are women treated the same as men in this most critical aspect? Well, folks, the simple answer is no. Do they stay in the same barracks? Again, no. Right before basic training in what they call the reception battalion and the initial physical fitness test for potential recruits, there is a difference. For males, this consists of 13 push-ups, 17 sit-ups, and a one-mile run in under 8.5 minutes. For females, the test consists of only 3 push-ups, 17 sit-ups, and 1 mile run in under 10.5 minutes. And if you fail this test, you'll get to spend some time at FAT camp, where brand new drill instructors get to practice on you for a while. But again, in basic training, the differential between males and females remains. Now, this is for the age group 17 through 21. Other ages have different criteria, but the point I'm making is it ends up being the same. Again, for push-ups, in 2 minutes, females have a minimum 13 versus males have 35. The equilibrium stays the same in the sit-up situation with 47, but in the 2 mile run, the minimums again, the differential is women have more time to do it than men. And you would think that with all this basic training and physical activity that in the end, when the final physical basic training test is taken, we would be at equality. Of course, it isn't so, folks. Push-ups, females are only required minimum of 19 versus males are at 42. Sit-ups, again, for some reason, are the same. But again, in the 2 mile run, women are given more time, 18.54 versus males at 15.54. This disparity continues throughout the different branches of all the services. Now, as to this question of the Selective Service Act, women having to register. The Selective Service Act specifically relates to men. It was first established 8 weeks after the United States entered the First World War as the Selective Service Act passed on May the 18th, 1917. At the time Congress passed the Selective Service Act, the military was a small army of only 100,000 men. Can you imagine only 100,000 back in those days? All agreed that this small force would in no way be able to make an impact on the war in Europe. Let me read to you the first sentence of this act, an act to authorize the president to increase temporarily the military establishment of the United States. And yes, women were not mentioned in the act. The Selective Service Law states male persons, not women. We are approaching a seminal moment in our cultural, legal, and sociological history in this country. On February the 15th, 2013, Representative Charles Rangel, Democrat of New York, announced that he planned on introducing legislation that would, one, bring back the draft, two, require those between the ages of 18 and 25 to perform 2 years of national service, either in the armed forces or in some civilian life capacity, and lastly, extending the draft to women. This proposed legislation would be called the All-American Selective Service Act. This stands in contrast to what the Supreme Court has said. In 1981, the U.S. Supreme Court, in the decision Rosker versus Goldberg, voted 6-3, stating that registering only men did not violate the Due Process Clause of the Constitution. Further, the Department of Defense in 1994 noted that male-only drafts adequately supplied sufficient numbers of any Army ground combat troops, and women were excluded by policy from being in combat roles. Further, in a special report titled Women in Combat, Pros and Cons, written by Major Thomas H. Cecil, U.S. Air Force, April 1988, Major Cecil portends various problems in the future if this aspect of military life is affected. And I quote, "Another significant impact of allowing women to serve in combat would be public reaction to changes in conscription laws. One could argue that there would be no rational reason to exempt women from registration if combat restrictions were abolished. This could generate oppositions to registration by those non-traditional females who want to avoid any possibility of combat, and those male and female rationalists who believe it morally and practically wrong for women to serve as combatants. This opposition could be strong and result in civil disobedience to registration laws and possibly result in termination of registration itself. Either prospect would be a strong signal to both friend and foe of a decline in both our military capability to mobilize and our will to maintain and use a strong military force." There is also another factor to be considered, folks. At what point do we want that line drawn between men and women collapsed and completely removed from our legal and societal norms? Recently, in an article dated January 23rd, 2013, by a gentleman by the name of Ryan Smith, called "The Reality of the Awaits Women in Combat," an interesting perspective is presented. Ryan Smith was a Marine infantry squad leader in the 2003 invasion of Iraq. In this article, he portrays the reality of war. He brings the real into focus as to what happens out in the field and what our soldiers are required, not asked to do, required. I could just tell you, but I believe that this one Marine whose own words speak volumes. So I will quote him. "Many articles have been written regarding the relative strength of women and the possible effects on morale of introducing women into all male units. Less attention has been paid to another aspect, the absolutely dreadful conditions under which grunts live during war. Many Marines develop dysentery from the complete lack of sanitary conditions. When an uncontrollable urge hit a Marine, he would be forced to stand as best he could, hold an MRE bag up to his rear, and defecate inches from his seated comrade's face. Further, he goes on, due to the heat and sweat, layers of our skin would peel off our feet. However, we rarely had time to remove our suits or perform even the most basic hygiene. We quickly developed sores on our bodies. When we did reach Baghdad, we were in shambles. We had not showered in well over a month, and our chemical protective suits were covered in a mixture of filth and dried blood. We were told to strip and place our suits in pits to be burned immediately. My unit stood there in a walled-in compound in Baghdad, naked, sores dotted all over our bodies, feet peeling, watching our suits burn. Later, they lined us up naked and washed us off with pressure washers. Societal norms are a reality, and their maintenance is important to most members of a society. It is humiliating enough to relieve yourself in front of your male comrades. One can only imagine the humiliation of being forced to relieve yourself in front of the opposite sex. Despite the professionalism of Marines, it would be distracting and potentially traumatizing to be forced to be naked in front of the opposite sex, particularly when your body has been ravaged by lack of hygiene. In the reverse, it would be painful to witness a member of the opposite sex in such an uncomfortable and awkward position. Combat effectiveness is based in large part on unit cohesion. The relationship among members of a unit can be irreparably harmed by forcing them to violate societal norms." I hope the words of this Marine strike at the heart of the social engineering that is taking place in America today. This is not the beginning, but a continuation of changing America from what it was to what they, the social engineers, want. Today is affecting our military, which seems like something removed and not affecting us. Today, we have a volunteer army. Tomorrow, who knows? What would you do if we had a major war and the draft was again instituted? Would you want your daughters to be placed in these types of situations? Does America really want its women placed in these kinds of roles with a potential for our women soldiers being dragged through some streets in some faraway land? This activity going on that is changing us in ways we don't even understand is called incrementalism. It means little by little. It's like taking a frog, throwing him into a boiling pot of water, and having him jump out. But if you place him in a pot of cold water and heat it up slowly to the boiling point, it's too late for the frog. He's cooked. America, we are in that pot of warming water. The America of old, if thrown into a boiling pot, would jump out. But that is not the case today. Today, we are in a slowly warming hot tub of incrementalism. And if we as a nation don't realize what is going on quickly, we are cooked. This incrementalist change has been going on slowly for the last 70 years. The America of a free enterprise system of the social boundaries between men and women is slowly receding into the annals of history. If we do not put a halt to it, then 70 years from now, when we read the books of yesteryears, we will not recognize ourselves for the loss of freedoms and the changes made to our legal, cultural, and societal norms. So I ask you, did you know this was really taking place in our America? Well, until next time, in our next Did You Know Show, keep your powder dry and your silver coins in your pocket.